Welcome to Busy Research, the podcast where business meets data and insights drive success. I'm your host, Vicki McCarthy, director of the Center for Applied Business Research at Austin Peay State University. On this podcast, we get busy learning about how applied business research can improve business decision making. Picture this. You're not just crunching numbers. You're decoding the mysteries of the market. Today, we're diving headfirst into the world of applied business research, where every data point is a clue and every analysis is a strategy in the making. What's the secret sauce behind successful businesses? How do they stay ahead of the game? Join us as we unravel the stories hidden in the statistics, demystify the charts, and explore the fascinating realm where business meets research. So buckle up, business warriors. Your data-driven quest is about to begin. Imagine you're the captain of a ship navigating uncharted waters. Applied business research is like having a detailed map, a reliable compass, and a skilled crew to help you make informed decisions on where to sail your ship. At its core, applied business research is a systematic approach to gathering, analyzing, and interpreting information to solve real-world business challenges. It's a process of uncovering valuable insights that guide decision-making, much like detectives gathering clues to solve a mystery. How it works. First, identify questions. Just like in any venture, you start with questions. What's working well in our business? Where are the challenges? What do customers really want? These questions become your compass. Next, collect data. Now think of data as your treasure trove. It could be numbers, opinions, or trends. You collect this data from various sources like customer surveys, sales reports, or industry studies. Then analyze your data. Once you have your treasure, it's time to make sense of it. Think of this as decoding a message. You use tools and methods to analyze this data, uncovering patterns and trends and opportunities. Then you're on to drawing conclusions. This is where you connect the dots. What does the data tell you? Are there new markets to explore? Is there a better way to serve your customers? It's like finding the X on the treasure map. Finally comes decision-making. Armed with your insights, you make informed decisions. It's like choosing the best course for your ship based on the mapped out information. Why does this matter? Imagine running a business without a compass or a map. Applied business research provides the strategic tools needed for businesses to navigate the complexities of the market. It minimizes risks, maximizes opportunities, and helps businesses stay ahead of the game. In essence, applied business research is the guiding star that ensures businesses don't sail blindly, but instead embark on a journey with a clear vision, purpose, and the best chance for success. It's about turning uncertainty into strategy and making sure your ship doesn't just float, but sails triumphantly toward success. To better understand how this journey unfolds, I turn to my colleague, Dr. Catherine Woods. Dr. Woods is a professor of leadership who has published research in business journals and is also the current editor of the Journal of Management and Marketing. Welcome to Busy Research, Dr. Woods.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, to kick things off, could you provide our listeners with a brief overview of your background and expertise in business research?
Well, sure. So I am a professor of leadership, and I have about 15 years of experience in leadership education and research. My research has mostly focused on organizational decision making, the impact of social media on organizational outcomes, and organizational diversity initiatives. So I've had the privilege of working on lots of research projects that bridge the gap between academic theory and real-world business challenges. And I also serve as a co-editor of a peer-reviewed academic journal. So that has provided lots of insight for me too, into different types of research projects that are being conducted and kind of some more creative ways of connecting theory to practice.
Wow, that's a lot. And all of your projects sound very interesting.
Thank you.
Can you talk about how the concept of business research and applied business research relate to what you're doing?
Well, sure.
And then, because we'll have some listeners that aren't even familiar with the term.
Mm-hmm. Yep, as well. So I would say applied business research is all about taking theory to practice. So theoretical concepts and applying them to real world situations. So solving practical problems faced by businesses using rigorous research methods. So unlike the pure academic research, applied research aims to have a direct impact on industry practices and decision making.
Great. So now can you share some examples from mm-hmm. your work where your research has had a direct impact on organizations or where it could have a direct impact on an organization?
Yes, certainly. So I have three examples I can talk to you about today. So first, in my courses, I teach a lot about leadership theory and concepts that relate to cultivating and capitalizing on diversity in the workplace. So managing the modern diverse workforce has been a hot topic for many years now as baby boomers age out of the workforce and millennials continue to be by far the largest group represented in the workforce. And there's lots of research out there about how different generations have different preferences and different tendencies. So a few years ago, I worked on a project that entailed surveying university students who belong to different generations to determine whether they have different perceptions about the challenges and opportunities afforded from working in a multi-generational workforce. So popular media tends to report on generational stereotypes and criticisms of one another. And that kind of coverage can exacerbate stereotypes that are not based on data derived from scientific studies. So participants were asked to share the main challenge in working with individuals from other generations. The main themes that we found in their perceptions of challenges were communication styles, technology skills, values and beliefs, work ethic, and perspective. So they were also asked what can be gained by working with individuals from other generations. And those themes that emerged in those perceptions of opportunities were knowledge, perspective, reciprocal mentoring, and work ethic. So the practical application of that study is it gives employers a glimpse into some of the ways that the current generational makeup of employees, which has shifted a lot over the last 10 years as baby boomers continue to retire, how that affects attitudes and how beneficial reciprocal mentoring programs can be for their workforce. So the insights gained from that research can inform a company's process for creating multi-generational work teams and reciprocal mentoring programs, which can lead to increased productivity and prevent loss of knowledge as baby boomers continue to exit the workforce. So reciprocal mentoring, if anyone's not familiar with that, is a program that an organization can set up where it doesn't have to be necessarily from different generations, but someone with more experience is paired with someone with less experience in a certain area, and they can share, you know, the most valuable skills that they have to offer with each other. So it's not necessarily that the older or more experienced employee is the only one who has something to share, but the less experienced or younger employee can also offer something. So a lot of times that's skills in technology or new systems that the other employee is not as savvy with. So those are some kind of practical applications that can be drawn from that. And then the next project, a couple of years ago, I completed a project in which I started with a framework that I've covered in my courses that's called the Apology Formula. So this is a framework created to guide the process of organizational apologies with the goal of minimizing damage for both the organization and its customers or stakeholders. So if you think about when an organization experiences a crisis, or a leader makes a big mistake that has big public consequences for their organization, there's a lot of strategies out there to consider when leaders have to decide how to handle the aftermath of a situation like that. So in this project, I analyzed how effective three recent high-profile organizational apologies were, how effective they were as viewed through the lens of the apology formula, and was able to identify some emerging opportunities and challenges that exist for organizations navigating the art of the public apology in the age of social media. So the application for organizations in a study like this is that when a company misses the mark on any of the steps outlined in the formula, the first thing they might want to do toward with the goal of earning their stakeholders' forgiveness, essentially, is to determine what's the public reaction via social media, and be ready to change directions and kind of start the process over if they miss the mark on the first try. So the insights gained from this type of research can inform a company's decision to use the right formula for an apology, depending on lots of different factors in, you know, what kind of mistake was made and what industry they're in and their organizational structure. After they see what did and didn't work in other situations. So ultimately, you know, hopefully that would lead to an improvement in stakeholder forgiveness after the apology is issued. And then lastly, the most recent project I've worked on that I wanted to share with you, I really wanted to look at signals that organizations send, so intentionally or unintentionally, to individuals about leadership readiness. So essentially, like, who are we setting up with opportunities for leadership development? Who are we saying you are a potential leader? So I started thinking about two common subgroups of chambers of commerce, and these include civic leadership groups and young professionals groups. So civic leadership groups are often named after their city or area, like Leadership Orlando, Leadership Denver, et cetera. And they exist to educate current business leaders about their community. So typically those are maybe 6 to 9 month programs offered annually, and participants have to apply and be selected to participate. So they move through the program as a cohort. They learn all about local industries, educational systems, just really whatever makes their area unique. And it's often the networking that makes it really, you know, truly valuable for the participants. The young professionals groups sponsored by chambers are typically offered for people under 40 who want to develop their professional networks. So they frequently host things like networking events and service projects. And these participants are often considered like the up and coming leaders in the area. So together with a colleague and one of my graduate students last year, I completed a study where we aimed to analyze demographic representation projected by those two common subgroups of chambers of commerce. So for the 100 most populated cities in the United States, we used photos that they posted on social media accounts for a 1 year period. And we observed and recorded the race or ethnicity of individuals depicted in the images that we reviewed. So there ended up being more than 95,000 faces that we observed and recorded data for in those images. And the results of that study indicated that white individuals are by far the most frequently overrepresented racial group in photos posted by those organizations when you compare those numbers to the community demographics. So, you know, we can easily pull the demographic information of an area represented by a chamber. So we were controlling for that. So, you know, if a area is 30%, you know, population of white people, but your photos posted on the civic leadership and young professionals organizations social media represented 80% white people, you know, that is a really glaring overrepresentation. So we did find, you know, white people are the most overrepresented. Black individuals were consistently underrepresented. And then non-white Hispanic individuals are the most frequently underrepresented in this study. So for these two types of groups in particular, underrepresentation of any racial or ethnic group with a presence in the community, you know, that could contribute to ongoing racial disparities in business leadership. So these organizations exist to develop the next generation of leaders in the area represented by the chamber. So these types of insights gained from that kind of leadership research can inform a company's intentional decision to accurately represent their communities and stakeholders via social media or otherwise, leading to, you know, hopefully a significant improvement in diversity and inclusivity, because we all know that, you know, in modern times, when you're looking to join an organization, one of the first things we do is we look to their social media and we think, well, what's going on? What have they been doing? And when you see faces that don't necessarily look like yours, you wonder if you're welcome, right? So drawing some conclusions that could help organizations ward that off and promote inclusivity. So those are three examples from projects that I've worked on that have results that I think could be fairly easily applied in a real world setting.
Wow, those are great examples. The reciprocal mentoring is something, like you said, lots of organizations could use to help development of their employees. Mm-hmm. And with the different generations in organizations, that seems like a very important aspect of talent development.
Yeah, and I think there's interesting research out too about other ways to use reciprocal mentoring, like not just with generational differences, but other, you know, demographic diversity components or behavioral or even just like ways of thinking. Like there's a lot of different ways that you can pair people up, I think, and let them learn from each other.
Right. And I love how you bookend the examples of this practical applied research with that, you know, talent development, but then also the recruitment aspect of your signals study of how, you know, how organizations recruit intentionally could be very different than those unintentional signals, like you said, of who are they representing in their social media, and is there a match or a mismatch between them? So very, very interesting. And then, of course, companies do get themselves in trouble, don't they, and have to apologize. In a very, very timely topic now, then, you know, with what's going on in the news and how these apologies do come through, and then are they effective or not, can have big consequences for organizations and their reputations. So thank you for those great examples. And for anyone that's out there who's doing research, business research, do you have advice that you'd like to share with these researchers so that they can have an impact on businesses and other organizations?
Yeah. So first, I'd say, you know, to cultivate a strong foundation in both theoretical knowledge and practical skills. So you have to know the theory to be able to connect it to practice. And then networking and collaboration, of course, are crucial in this field. Building relationships with industry professionals and just staying curious about real world challenges can open doors to really meaningful research opportunities. So for me personally, when I see something that's going on that I think, how did they let that happen? You know, like a lot of times it's like some sort of glaring error or big kind of like oops kind of thing that happens that you can tell as you're reading reports or whatever, that you think, wow, somebody really dropped the ball there. It's those are the things that make, I think, really interesting studies to see how systems break down, because, you know, they weren't planning for that and they probably did have some system in place and it just didn't work as it should or whatever. So I think it's interesting to study like holes in the system, if you will, to see kind of where problems originate or where they grow or whatever. And then I think that can lead to some interesting types of conclusions in your research about how organizations can prevent future, you know, disruptions in their business. So I think that can be a good way to generate ideas.
Well, that's excellent advice. So know the theory, mm-hmm. networking and collaborating, mm-hmm. and stay curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. But before we wrap up, mm-hmm. what trends do you see will be shaping the future of applied business research in leadership and other areas that you study? Mm-hmm. And how can researchers stay ahead of these?
Mm-hmm. So I would say certainly the integration of technology. So we hear lots and lots about AI, data analytics, you know, all those big trends that I think are here to stay for sure. I have been to several webinars on different like ways that AI is impacting leadership education or leadership research. And it's all very interesting. And it does feel very like otherworldly, I think. So it's not something, you know, I'm not using AI on a daily basis. So it's definitely something that I think links back to the stay curious part, right? So you have to stay informed and kind of put yourself out there a little bit and open up to the idea of you don't know what you don't know. And then, you know, I think that will help you embrace these kind of tools and stay agile, adapting to new methodologies, new topics, and then maintaining a global perspective and considering the environmental and social impacts of business practices will definitely be increasingly important. I think there's lots of trends in peer-reviewed journals right now that their scope is aiming to be more broad in a global context. So I have a couple of articles that I have out for a review right now. And both of them, interestingly, when I got feedback from the reviewers, they both said, oh, you know, this is good and this is good, but can you add more of a global context? Can you make this fit in to our global scope of our journal? Like they want it to be readable and digestible for a global audience. And I think that's something really good to keep in mind on the front end when you're doing these types of applied research projects, because the more globally applicable it is, the, you know, obviously it would be able to reach a bigger audience, but also just be able to help more people. And as our society becomes more global, it just, I think, is helpful to keep that kind of mindset from the outset of starting any kind of project like that.
Right. And as our even smaller businesses, local businesses have global outreach, and you know, if they're selling overseas and all mm-hmm. of that, it can, it's yeah, that's great. That's good to know. So to stay flexible because of the trends in technology, especially mm-hmm. in AI, and then also maintaining the global perspective because we are continuing to become more and more global.
Yeah. And even like we have somewhat new thread of research, I guess, in leadership, where we're studying e-leadership. So because, you know, we've had remote work teams and things for a long time, mediated by the internet, but obviously with the pandemic and this huge uptick in folks working from home, and I read an article yesterday about like the death of the business park, you know, how there's hundreds of thousands of square feet of business parks in the United States that are empty because companies are realizing benefits of letting people work from home. And that's what people are wanting in the workforce right now, and et cetera. So there's a big rise in the study of e-leadership because sometimes those skills are quite different if you're leading a team in person or you're leading a team virtually, or even if you're on a team in person or you're on a team virtually, you might need some different skills. So there's kind of an exciting emerging body of research coming out about that. And that's something that I'm kind of excited to dive into as well myself. So hopefully, you know, that would be something that would be applicable globally as well, because I don't think we're the only country experiencing that phenomenon. So we'll see.
Wow. Yeah, that's very exciting. That sounds like a great trend to get ahead of and start looking into, and the leadership on that. Well, thank you, Dr. Woods, for sharing your insights with us today. It has been a pleasure having you on this episode of Busy Research.
Well, thank you, Vicki. It was my pleasure.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of Busy Research. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. We'll catch you in the next episode of Busy Research. Until then, stay curious and busy.